hello, hello, and welcome to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media, and we're coming at you from the capital, a capital that is terribly somber today, of course, for folks outside of Ottawa's capital. This is the one-year anniversary of the shooting that happened at the memorial, and of course, I had the pleasure of being there earlier today. We're having a little bit of trouble here. So, Seamus, why don't you introduce the topic?
Hello, campers. Welcome to today's episode. It's the LGBT homeless, and I've put in brackets youth, because as some of you may or may not know, I'm the 50 plus, so I don't like to just say, you know, homeless youth, gay youth. It's encompassing everyone. We have a couple of special guests, and if I get you to introduce yourselves, please. Oh, they've got no sound at all on their mics. Is that the story? I'll keep you entertained. I had the time today to take out and see this morning's memorial, and my sincere wishes and thoughts go to the families and our service people. I'm not used to filling in space. Imagine that, me speechless. I want to say a happy Liberal celebration as well for our new team that are happening, and hopefully some of the events that we will be covering regarding LGBT issues will be covered, because I know there are a couple issues that the Conservative Party put through that have affected our and I hate the word lifestyle, but have challenged our culture in the bedrooms. And now that Mr. Trudeau's rest in peace, his son is going to be in power once again, then he can support us that the government has no room in our boudoirs. And so I think we're ready, ladies. If you could introduce yourselves, please.
My name's Larissa Silver. I'm the Director of Community Services at Youth Services Bureau.
Fantastic.
My name's Sue Pullane, and I'm the Coordinator of the Young Women's Shelter at the Youth Services Bureau.
Fantastic. You guys may or may not know my brother, Mr. Chip McHugh, who's a counselor there as well.
Yes.
Excellent. So, yeah, we certainly have a very busy day ahead of us. And 'cause this is, of course, a quite a substantial topic. We were just talking before we came in about the statistics. You know, it's difficult to know how many people are either homeless or street involved, especially when we're looking at youth, because of course it's so difficult to do that. You know, a traditional census is something you find in the mail or slipped under your door, and you know, if you don't have a mailing address, how are you supposed to identify how many folks in Ottawa are street involved? So is there any way that we have any idea of that here in Ottawa?
So I think that there has been a move very recently over the last few years to try to get some research about youth homelessness. You know, as you're saying, it can be difficult in general to try to get a sense of who is it that we're serving. But the shelters are always a great place to have a bit of a microcosm of what's happening in the larger community. For youth, though, because many youth are unstably housed or they're couch surfing with friends, it can be even harder to get a sense of what are the numbers we're talking about. And then if we're wanting to get an idea of subpopulations as well, youth that are self-identifying as LGBTQ, trans, queer identified youth, that also is about self-disclosure and the safety in doing that. And so we have some sense from national organizations and some researchers that are very, very committed and interested in understanding and preventing youth homelessness, and understanding that youth homelessness is really about trying to prevent chronic adult homelessness.
I was wondering, can you tell me what are the names of the other services in the region sending LGBT youth to Ottawa instead of helping them where they are?
Well, I'm not sure about other communities. All I know is that in Ottawa, it is a fairly large city, and there are rural components to the city of Ottawa. So the only youth shelter that we have is in downtown Ottawa.
Okay. I'm going to put my Judge Judy hat on for a second, and I want to know, do LGBT youth face discrimination in the shelter system?
I think they
that would be a yes or a no.
Yes, yeah. So the yes or no is, I would say, unfortunately in some cases, yes, because in any place where there are marginalized individuals, we really need to pay attention to how we may be unintentionally continuing that. But I also know that particularly with YSB, we've done a huge amount of work within our staff and within our structure to really make sure that youth are as welcome and as accessible as possible. And Sue can speak more to even the work that we were doing with trans youth back in 2002 to make sure our shelter was accessible to those that were identifying as trans.
And specifically, what has been done to address that? What things have you put in place?
Sure. Well, in our agency, we've had, you know, a policy or a discussion paper on homosexuality since 1984. So when we opened up our young women's shelter in 1995, when our young women come into the shelter, we talk about being a culturally sensitive, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender environment, that all young women are welcome. And we talk about, if there's homophobic or racist comments, we challenge people's thinking and try to have a conversation. And then basically the message is, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, then you really need to keep your comments to yourself, and you need to be respectful of people. You don't have to like people, but you need to be respectful. And so we've always had young women being able to identify being lesbian or bisexual, because we also have a number of out staff. We have messages that say it's okay to be who you are in our shelter. And with that, we learnt about youth in 2001, that if they could not live with their family safely, they would have nowhere to go. And we weren't equipped to deal with trans youth in the shelters in 2000. However, it became apparent that we needed to do something different, and that's when we approached the trans community. We did some training with staff, we talked to young women, and we moved forward with working with trans youth. So right now, if we have a trans youth that comes to our young women's shelter or a young men's shelter, we have a conversation with them about what feels more comfortable and what matches.
Brilliant.
We know that, you know, gender is fluid and it can change, and we're not hung up on all kinds of rules and regulations. It's more about where someone feels most comfortable.
What is the
just before we get into that, I just want to we want to take a minute just to fix some technical issues we're having. So in the meantime, this is a Tribe Called Red featuring Buffy Sainte-Marie, and their new song that came out very recently. Actually, it's free to the public. If you go to the website, you can download it. This is a song called Working for the Government, which I think is quite
very appropriate.
I know, absolutely. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Take it away, Buffy.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media. And today we are discussing the topic of LGBT and LGBT+. There's a quite the ridiculous range of acronyms. But we're really talking about folks who are homeless or street involved and in a youth category. And perhaps we can break down, you know, what does YSB consider to be youth? I think we had a great conversation earlier that often what you call youth depends entirely on who will pay you. So so a lot of these criteria unfortunately falls down to funding. So in your experience, what does the Youth Services Bureau consider to be youth in terms of its homelessness programming?
Homelessness specifically?
Well, we'll talk more broadly and then narrow it down to some of your programs.
Sure. Well, YSB in general will look at 12 up to 24 as youth. And in some cases with our mental health team, for example, they may work with families and even younger kids, but generally sort of that 12 to 24. The funding piece I think you were mentioning is around some of our funding, particularly around mental health, comes from funders that have to cap somewhere. And so they cap at age 18. And what that means is that some young people at age 18 may find themselves in an adult system. And youth is often about transition, right? And at 18, some of us might be ready for an adult system, and many of us may not be. And so how do we support those youth making that switch? And so there has been a great deal of attention right now on what we call transitional aged youth. So how do we support youth involved in the mental health system work within that, say, 16 to 24 range? Right? With housing, certainly, we tend to see youth more from that 16 to 24 because, you know, even around 14, they're still often involved with, if they're not at home, they may be involved with CAS. And so it's kind of that 16 to 24 area that we tend to focus on.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. CAS?
Oh, sorry, Children's Aid Society.
Thank you. Yeah. And one other question. So when you're 25 and on, where do you send someone? Where do you recommend?
If someone's over the age of 24,
25 and over.
Yeah, there are men's homeless shelters, and there's a couple of women homeless shelters, as well as VAW shelters.
Yeah,
and a VAW?
Violence Against Women. Now, most Violence Against Women shelters are funded, just to be clear, to serve women experiencing partner violence from 16 and up. So, but often, again, in that younger area, the need for being able to work with those and understand that age range is really important. So they may end up being best served in our shelter, but it sort of depends on that situation, right? It's a very situational piece.
And the reason why I'm, you know, so gung-ho there is because people got to wake up. People got to realize we are getting older. Mm-hmm. Canada is getting older. Mm-hmm. The generations are getting older. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not to put any sidelines on the youth, but we've got to really start opening the umbrella in these things with the age categories.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
You know,
we need to recognize that we all go through transitions at different points
in our lives, absolutely.
And that system that, you know, and I appreciate too that challenge of trying to, there has to be a cutoff at some point, mm-hmm, I get mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm. But what that looks like and how flexible that can be based on where the client or each individual is at would be wonderful, and I know that funders are really aware of that.
Good stuff, good to hear.
Yeah, it is really good, but I think that again, that's why when we talk about youth homelessness, we really talk about that as prevention piece, mm-hmm. as well. So, you know, it is about supporting youth where they're at, you know, and where they're at will change, you know, in that one youth a number of different times. Mm-hmm. But it's also about trying to look at that chronic adult homelessness and what can we do in that period of time where we have access to support those youth so that they are able to make whatever choices they need to make in a supported environment to be able to make the choices that will help set them up mm-hmm. to transition into adulthood. So youth services can't just be about that physical roof over your head and food and clothing. It also really needs to take into account that transition into adulthood, that youth are leaving, you know, family places where they may not have had a whole lot of control or power because of their age, because of where they're at. And so we need to be cognizant and aware of that, too, and our services need to do the best they can to help youth transition into adulthood as well.
I want to touch on bringing it, I'm so sorry, back to youth.
No, that's fine. I'm going to stick my Welsh nose in.
The reason why I mentioned that is because obviously we mentioned at the top of the hour the rate of homeless youth who identify as lesbian, gay, bi, trans is anywhere from 20% according to a study in Toronto, and even as high as up to 40%. And that's a very phenomenal percentage. And I think what's particularly concerning is that it's so disproportionate to other age ranges. Outside of the youth category, it kind of drops back down towards the 10, 15 or lower. So why do you think it's so much higher under the youth age category that folks are identifying as LGBT? So what are perhaps some of the causes that are disproportionate to LGBT youth that leads them into homelessness?
Well, I think it's about the identification as well. Youth are a lot more fluid when it comes to their sexuality or gender identity. And I can't really answer that, but all I can say is that when our youth come out and say that they're lesbian or bisexual, a lot of times their family have not been supportive of this. They have conflict at home. Most of our young women that are coming into the shelter, home is not a safe option. They've been asked to leave, or there's violence in the home, there's mental health, there's addictions. It's not because they don't want to follow the rules of the home. And a lot of times our young women describe traditional parenting and families that expect, young women in very specific gender roles. And when they don't fit that mold is when the conflict happens. And they are disempowered and they are asked to leave the home. And then they're kind of starting from scratch. At 16 years old, if you can't live safely with your family in Ontario, you're entitled to financial eligibility, and they expect a 16-year-old to live on their own or have a supportive housing, which there's not a lot of supportive housing for youth in general.
You've really put the nail on the head there, and I think what people forget or people don't realize, people don't know, is there are so many elements that come into that picture when you're a youth. People don't realize we only do what we know. So if you don't know how to take care of yourself at 16, 18, 25, 35, Where are you going to learn it?
Yeah.
You're not learning it at home, so I'm going to learn it on the street. What do you learn on the street?
Yeah.
Other different behavior.
Yeah, it's rarely how to boil an egg, right? And I think that's part of that transition we were talking about into adulthood, right? What are those life skills that we need? And we think about life skills from that big picture. How do you create a budget? And that's an important thing to know. But sometimes it's really as straightforward as how do you grocery shop? Like, what are those staples? What is it that I need? And how do I need a pot? Do I need and some of us, have those stories of having a piece of chicken in a pot and literally having no idea what to do with it because it's like, I knew I needed chicken and I knew I needed a pot. How do these things come together, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you need to understand that they might be 17, but that doesn't mean they know how to look after themselves, right?
Right.
And what does looking after themselves mean for them, too? Because I think that's the other thing to understand. And that's where we need to be careful about creating a one-size-fits-all model. Mm-hmm. And as we're just talking about those limited accesses and options, YSB is the only youth-specific serving shelters in Ottawa, right?
And I also think one of the dangers of that, too, is you're setting up, the system is setting up a false sense of security for an individual because it's like, oh, okay, I can go there. I can go there for my lunch. I can go there for that, and I'm okay. Well, you know what? If that's okay, you got to point out that, oh, okay, so you're going to do that for the next 10 years of your life.
I think we're going to bounce off there is, and I get what you're saying there, Seamus, but what I think would be interesting is, you talked about the chicken and the pot. Is there any degree of skill development or workshopping or other resources that happens at YSB to kind of, explain what to do with the chicken in the pot. Mm. You know, essentially those necessary life skills. So you're not bouncing from
what kind of programs
soup
do you guys
kitchen.
Have in place?
Yeah.
Well, it's individual as well. The other thing, just before I get into that, I think it's really important to acknowledge the fact that adolescence is a time of experimentation, of figuring out themselves. Your peer group is so important. A sense of belonging is very important. And our youth have been isolated a lot of times in their home, feeling very different. Yes, things have gotten better for our queer folks, but it still has a long way to go. And there's still a lot of discrimination and a lot of inferior feelings about people that are queer.
Mm-hmm.
So in our agency, we certainly look at the individual and see what they need to kind of learn, what kind of goals, what kinds of supports they need in the shelters. They are cooking their own breakfast and lunch. We're alongside of them, helping them to figure out how to use things, how
Brilliant.
To do chores, really specifically dealing with each individual depending on what their needs are, because that is the way to go, is to be able to assess and work with the youth and find out what they need to know and what kinds of things they already do know. Some of the youth are better cooks than some of the staff. I'm saying
goodness.
They could teach us some things. So, and that's really true. Everybody's at different levels, mm-hmm. and it's important to know where they're at and then make sure that we help support them with that. But it is also that they need to be able to see other queer youth that they can relate to, that they can feel that they're not so alone. As a queer woman, I felt so different. And when I saw all the different people that identified as lesbian, that changed my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I really needed to see a variety, and it wasn't the stereotypical butchy lesbians that were out there. There are some, and we have to blow up some of those, you know, stereotypes of what people are. And I think that's really important.
I'm just curious, with those programs, are there ways, I know, we've got our government red tape of procedures and policies, which are important, but is there a way an individual can volunteer at YSB with the program? Or
so I think
is there a way a listener can get involved if they wanted to give some time?
Absolutely.
Other than donating, obviously, which is
which is always welcome.
Green, the green. We want green.
Well, we want to make sure that our programs are as fulsome as they can be, right? Mm-hmm. Which does require support. And I think that if somebody wants to get involved, to give us a call and talk through what some options might be, I think volunteering is something that's really, really important to do, regardless of where you want to volunteer. And I think that one of the things that YSB is talking about is how do we best harness volunteers? How do we best use that resource in a way that benefits the youth the most? And I know that we'd really like to be doing some looking around like peer-to-peer support. We do quite a bit of that with our youth advisory groups and that youth engagement piece, and wanting to expand some of that as well. So don't be shy to give us a call and have a conversation.
Is there somebody specific that we can speak to? Who's your representative for that?
You would think so. You could start with me, I guess.
Cool.
Give me a call, and I'd love to give you my number off the top of my head, and I'm drawing a complete blank. So
that's fine. Whilst we pull up your number, we will jump to a quick music break.
You just ask her for her number?
I'm happy for that, by the way. We'll talk later.
He was just celebrating a year on Facebook. I'm sure I saw a lovely picture.
I was going to say, the world is fluid. The world is fluid, my friends.
Oh, gee. I'm sure my partner will be okay with that.
Why not, right?
Now, somebody else that I will be totally okay with a certain ménage à trois is Troy Sivan, who... YouTube star who's put together his EP, which is a three-part called Blue Neighborhood. The last song, Talk Me Down, it's a very sad song, but it's had quite a powerful impact. Definitely worth checking out. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And
that's a great name.
Oh, I know, his name
I'm
is
thinking
amazing.
Thinking out loud, it's very adult star.
Anyway, wait, that wasn't where I was going.
This show just took a turn.
Oh, jeez. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. You know, raising the tone, just the smidge. Anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Wanna come home to you, but home is just a room full of my safest sounds. Cause you know that I can't trust myself with my 3 a.m. shadow. I'd rather fuel a fantasy than deal with this alone. I wanna sleep next to you, but that's all I wanna do right now. So come over now and talk me down.
With two fantastic ladies from the Youth Services Bureau.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about the LGBT. You know, you kill me because you're always changing your acronyms around. So I'm like, if I usually say LGBT, and then I'm looking and I'm going, he's written GLBT, and that's like freaking me out. Homelessness. Or as I like to say, and again, it's about breaking the stereotypes and that we were talking about. And I noticed this, unfortunately, on that horrible fire yesterday
on
Somerset, when they were doing the news broadcast, and you know, I was wondering if anyone was hurt and whatnot, and they said, you know, X amount of people were without home. Which I found very interesting. That just put a little signal in my head, and I thought, you know what? That's what I'm going to say now. Instead of saying, you know, our LGBT homeless, the LGBT without a home. Because as soon as you say homeless, people are like, oh, drugs. And
you all know? Those stereotypes kick in.
Anyway,
right?
I'll shut up. Go ahead, Luke.
So I think we were talking just before the show about a project that I'm actually working on with a number of colleagues here in Ottawa to hopefully address what may be a gap in services, looking specifically at male victims of intimate partner violence or men affected by domestic abuse. So in particular, gay men, because right now, mm-hmm. if you are a gay man affected by domestic abuse, you don't really have anywhere to go except for either the adult male shelters or the young men's shelter. And I'm sure you presumably have some programming around that happens.
You don't know where to go, and I'm going to just pop in here for a second just because I've experienced with that, because I was with my partner for 8 years, and in the last year, I had to call the police twice, you know, and after I finally woke up in the second bathroom and realized, oh, my God, I've married, but technically I wasn't married because we didn't have gay marriage then. Mm. Remember, I'm the old one. And I was on the floor crying in the bathroom going, oh, my God, I've married my stepfather. Mm. And I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you do in a situation like that? What we identified is that there really is a lack of services. There is no male equivalent to the VAW movement. And by no means are we saying that it's ripe and men are always... I mean, that's not what we're saying. We're saying that there's a very small percentage of men who are affected by intimate partner violence, in particular either gay men or male adult children, male dependents of women affected by intimate violence. So what do you do? You know, if you have somebody who comes to the young men's shelter and they say, you know, this is...
my boyfriend's beating me up.
Yeah, well,
let's call it what it is.
Mm-hmm. How does one react to that information, like as the young men's shelter with YSB?
Well, I think, you know, we certainly have experience with unhealthy relationships, and that crosses, you know, all sexual orientation. So in that case, youth are disclosing that their partners are abusive. And once again, we go back to the individual circumstances and support. And you know, we certainly try to help support them to get to a safe place, to get some support, and to help them move forward with what they need to do. But that is something that we are, you know, quite experienced at. There's a lot of dysfunction out there. There's a lot of unhealthy relationships. Mm-hmm. And our youth are looking to us for support and how to make some of those changes and make things a little bit healthier.
How many counselors do you have on hand?
In the shelters,
yes.
We have 7 full-time workers and about 20 staff.
Wow.
So there's about 3 staff on in the evenings and 2 on the awake overnight, because we're housing 30 youth in one specific location, and the level of needs are quite different, and so there's a lot of youth that we're working with.
And I was just wondering, does YSB, do they have an open house day or open house where
you have a drop-in center,
individual, but where an individual can go? Because the drop-in center, you can't specific, like, I'll let you speak.
Well, the drop-in center is open 365 days a year for from noon to 6 for any young person who is looking for a connection, who needs a safe space, who needs some warmth. But through the drop-in, you can get connected to all of our other services. But we also have a 24-hour crisis line with our mental health team. We actually just launched a new chat feature online, so youth can actually go online and connect to mental health counselors as well.
Is that number the same as the crisis line?
The chat line, because
that's
online, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, and so if you go to our website, there's a link there to that.
That's the internet.
Yes, I appreciate that we're dealing I was just going to say, we're dealing
you
with the generational
cow. I'm going to put you in with the goats. The reason why I ask is because there is a crisis line that's with the Royal Ottawa.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's a different number,
that's
correct?
That would be a different
number.
Thank you. But all numbers are good numbers, right? All numbers are good numbers. So, yeah. But we do, so we've got the support that Sue was talking about within the shelter themselves. But we also have, you know, there's youth workers at our drop-in. We have intensive case management as well that youth can get connected to. Plus the mental health services. We have youth employment that we have. So YSB is actually quite a large organization with multiple points of access. Mm-hmm. To help youth at any age with their families, if that's appropriate for them, to get what it is that they need.
You mentioned earlier about healthy relationships, and I think it's important to note that healthy relationships doesn't just mean your boyfriend or your girlfriend. It means, you know, your familial environment, your home peer environment, group. Your peer group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this might even include folks where, you know, a lot of the homeless population, maybe not a lot, I think that might be using weasel words here, but there is a proportion of the population who are without a home, who do couch surfing or stay with friends or, you know, move around amongst their peer groups. And I think at that point, having an understanding of healthy relationships perhaps takes on a different lens. Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of folks? I mean, I'm not sure if you would see folks who are couch surfing, but do you interact with them?
Yeah, so certainly at the drop-in, we might. Youth that are unstably housed, that have a place for the night, but, you know, not sure about tomorrow, that kind of thing. And so so that's where that drop-in really can become that point of access, because it really is, it's a low threshold access point where people, young people, can just walk in during the hours we're open and, you know, connect with anybody that they need to. Or if they just want to come in and get a lunch and have a shower and do some laundry, access the food bank, you know, they can do that as well. They don't have to go through a whole long assessment piece to get mm-hmm. services. There's some conversation initially with staff for sure, but, you know, the idea is that it's a safe, welcoming, low threshold space where ideally, as they're getting whatever immediate service they need, they have that opportunity to connect with youth workers. And we also have our health services there as well, with some public health nurses, some nurse practitioners, so access into those physical health supports as well at the drop-in location.
And the other thing, too, is just that youth are scared to go to a shelter. I mean, when mm-hmm. most people mm-hmm. think about a shelter, they think about bunk beds and dirty and, you know, lots of people. And our shelter isn't not like that. It's a beautiful facility in the sense that everybody has their own room, which locks. There's privacy doors for the showers. It's communal living, but there's, you know, it's not as bad as people think. So as soon as someone calls us about our shelter, we're quick to ask them, have you ever been to our shelter before? And we describe it, and we really encourage them to come for a tour and check us out, because it really is voluntary. But once again, we're trying to break through that stereotype of what a shelter is, especially for youth in Ottawa. We only have the Young Women's Shelter and the Young Men's Shelter run by YSB in Ottawa mm-hmm. as youth shelters. And they both are, you know, nice places.
And just to clarify, too, because, again, I can speak to this on personal experience, Luke, the type of environment that you were speaking of earlier is for the elder the bunk beds and that sort of description, because mm-hmm. that's what I experienced because in 2000 and oh, I've got to go back now, 2003, I was homeless myself without a home for about three and a half weeks. And I did not go to family or friends because I was completely embarrassed mm-hmm. because of mm-hmm. my age at the time. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there one night because I was scared for my life because I am a gay man. Mm-hmm. And I got the looks up and down. So, yeah, one night was all I could handle. And for the remaining 5 days, I stayed at the lovely little parquet that is in the glebe there. So the leaves kept me nice and warm. And then after that, I was very resourceful. And I remembered I still had my apartment keys. And for 2 weeks, I stayed in my wooden locker that was in the basement of the building. And so them's the realities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are some of the difficult barriers that some youth might face if they are, in particular, straight involved? And what kind of resources do you have available to folks around that? I bring it up because, of course, there have been numerous studies around the exposure to HIV risks. For folks who are street involved, along with other sexually transmitted diseases or bloodborne infections.
So you got your STDs, your STIs, HIV, And I didn't hear, what exactly is blood-borne infection?
Blood-borne.
So blood-borne, sorry.
Infections carried in the blood.
In your blood.
Hepatitis C. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
So we're talking about harm reduction,
absolutely,
really, right? Yeah. And so Public Health of Ottawa, we have public health nurses that come to the drop-in. We really do try to focus on all of our staff, understand harm reduction. We have needle exchanges. We have free condoms, things like that, right? So, and then there's some testing with through public health and our health services that are downstairs in the drop-in too. So, you know, recognizing that going to an adult clinic again might be a barrier, right? So what can we do to support youth to get to the services that they need?
Right, yeah. And having more of a youth-friendly atmosphere for them.
Because when you feel comfortable, when you feel safer, then you can look to take better care of yourself, because you've got all this, I'm without a home, I'm hungry, oh, I'm embarrassed, oh, God, now I've got to get checked for an STI or an STD. Okay, people, just try to think of that picture on a homeless person.
Yeah. It's a lot to try to deal with, and you can't just pick it apart. And again, you know, we were talking about sort of family breakdown and potentially experiences of violence, or, you know, and then adding identity issues that may or may not be accepted by your family, right? So we're right back full circle to where we are in the beginning of this show, right? Mm-hmm. So how does unstable housing impact LGBTQ youth, right? And what does that look like? And I think it's as with other, you know, any other marginalized group, the system really needs to understand that that adds an element to that experience, and we can't just ignore it, and we can't just pretend it's not there. And then that's part of everybody's identity, regardless of where you land. Where you are today might be different than where you are tomorrow, and all of that needs to be okay.
Mm-hmm. So we really need to look at this more holistically then.
Agreed.
is what I'm getting. You know, of course, we recently had the election on Monday. Unless you've been under a very, very large rock, the Liberals swept the power.
I'm laughing because I was.
Yeah. I did get that memo, though, but thanks for clarifying.
And it's interesting because during the LGBT debates that happened around the country, unfortunately, there was no input from the Conservatives on those, but the Liberals, in particular Catherine McKenna, who is the...
I'm just giggling about the Conservatives.
Wars.
Who is the Ottawa Central NDP, not NDP, God, Liberal candidate.
Come on.
It's been a very long day.
This whole thing is falling apart. Go ahead.
Yes, so Catherine McKenna, Liberal Ottawa Centre candidate, and now elected MP, noted that the Liberals had promised, I think it's $20 billion to their social infrastructure fund when she was asked specifically about LGBT homelessness. And I think her point was really that, you know, they're promising quite a substantial amount of funding to tackle some of the concerns or lack of fundings around issues of homelessness. So are you cautiously optimistic, perhaps, that $20 billion might translate into some increased funding?
Well, cautiously optimistic. We're always cautiously optimistic, right? I appreciate that there are always pressures, and there's a need out there for in any way you can imagine. So it's not that there's a service charity out there that would tell you, you know what, we're good, just pass those dollars somewhere else, mm-hmm. because we have more than we can spend. I mean, the needs are high, the issues are complex. We were just talking about that need to try to be as individual as possible as we can with every youth that walks through our door. And that means that it's not an easy stamp, right? So, and that takes resources, that takes infrastructure, and that takes, you know, being able to have staff like we do. We're very fortunate to have knowledgeable, experienced, professional staff that can work with youth in the way that they need that to happen. So very cautiously optimistic, particularly because in most cases, funding has been static and costs have continued to rise. Mm-hmm. And that puts a lot of pressure on all of us to do the best we can with what we have. But, you know, we don't want to have to make hard decisions.
My takeaway too is also that instead of saying, you know, they said, oh, X amount of promised dollars, I take away that this government is going to be looking at that. We have been acknowledged, mm-hmm. as where maybe another party, and I won't say who that was, didn't even look at us.
Well, and
we weren't even on the radar.
Yeah, and you know, and those things, they seem like they're small, but they're not, because mm-hmm. that's part of the public discourse and the public mm-hmm. dialogue nationally and provincially and locally. I mean, you know, and that acknowledgement that we are talking about people, regard, you know, people, it's sorry, I'm losing my words because I get so worked up, right? But it's just
why do you think I was so excited when I came in today?
I know, but it is, it, you know, it's meaningful, and it yeah. is a moment. And you know, you had referenced Pierre Trudeau about the state has no business in people's bedrooms, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And we got so far away from that, mm-hmm. you know, that but it's not about, it's about getting out of the bedrooms, but it's also about acknowledging our individuality and our opportunity to define that however we want, mm-hmm. and whether that's gender fluid, whether that's gender queer, whether that's a sexual identity, that shouldn't need to matter in terms of what's my experience. If I need help, where's that system for me?
And JT, as the to be mm-hmm. hip and trendy,
oh,
and
my goodness.
Oh, not an elder, Justin Trudeau. That's a little invite right now from me personally to come on board
down. Yeah,
to the Velvet Studio. We can have a chat,
and then bring him by YSB as well.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
I think what, if anything, we've managed to establish today is that it is a very complex issue,
mm-hmm.
And that it's a highly intersectional issue. You mentioned earlier about, you know, it's having a place to stay is only one of the elements that needs to be mm-hmm. approached.
It's taken into consideration. Mm-hmm.
There's also, you know, having somewhere to have some food, or, you know, if you're mm-hmm. looking for employment, it's having, you know, work appropriate clothing to wear. Like, there's lots mm-hmm. of
yeah.
various things.
And that transition into adulthood, and I know I keep bringing that up, but I do think that is one of the unique distinctions between adult homelessness, or adults living without homes,
okay.
and youth living without homes, is that they are in a transition into adulthood. It really adds a different element and dimension to the way in which we engage with those clients, and the way in which we can support them in moving forward and understand. We might just have them for this brief amount of time. What's the best we can do, and how can we be most successful at supporting them and preventing that chronic adult homelessness, right?
And of course, that brief amount of time is so incredibly impactful mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Lots of development happening at that stage, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, do you have any closing remarks?
I actually, yes. I wanted to ask each of you that, you know, you've said some very, very important things. If there's somebody listening right now that's about to be without a home or is in a situation, what would you like to say to them right now?
Yeah, we're looking at each other. Who would like to go first with our inspirational words? I think for me, it would be very much about not giving up. And I know that sounds trite, but you know it isn't. And I think that it's okay to need help. It's okay to reach out. It's not about anything that you've done. It's sometimes those circumstances that happen to all of us, and that there is somebody out there that wants to listen and that wants to support. And if you feel that you can't get down to the drop-in to walk in our doors, get on the phone and call our crisis line, get on the computer and chat with us, or just call us and we'll do whatever we can do to support you. You don't have to sleep cold, alone, and hungry tonight if you don't need.
And you do belong in our community.
Mm-hmm.
The youth that come to our shelter are our sisters, our brothers, our nieces, our nephews.
Mm-hmm.
They're regular kids mm-hmm. for lots of different reasons. They can't live safely at home. And they need our support. And we need to encourage them. And, you know, some of the youth have a hard time talking to adults. They haven't had good experiences. So we need to be patient. And we really need to listen. And not just hear, but validate, you know, what they're going through, what they think about things. And for them, as one of you mentioned, like, the safe space is so important. And that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to remember. It can't be, you know, it's a process. It's not just a one-time thing. And we need to prove ourselves to these youth, because mm-hmm. We haven't done so well in the past.
Yep. They're ordinary young people in extraordinary circumstances.
That's a great way to put it.
Thank you. I wanted to, do we got to do quick community announcements or things coming up or what?
We don't have enough time,
but okay.
It will be on our Facebook and our Twitter.
Alrighty.
Always worth checking out. However, I do want to mention, as we play out with this last song, Something Inside So Strong, by I want to say Labi Sifri, Sifri. Anyway.
Sifri.
Anyway, whatever.
Hi.
So this, no. I really should have got
the double F's. Hello, it's a.
Yes. So he wrote this song, and it came out in 1987, and it was considered to be a anthem of the anti-apartheid movement. However, he recently revealed to the BBC, as in about this week, that the first two lines, you know, the higher you build your barriers, the taller I become. You know, he was writing about growing up as a homosexual in the 70s and the 80s. So this has been revealed to be about the struggle of homosexuality. So yes, we'll be playing up this song. Bit of a throwback, but definitely worth looking at it with that new lens.
And not to be trite, you know, but it is going to go on record because I have two witnesses Thursday, October 22nd, 2015, that I did get elder abuse from Luke, my co-partner, on the Velvet Studio, like us.
We'll address them next week. Have a good weekend.
You can deny me. You can decide to turn your face. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, there's something inside so strong. My voice, the louder I will sing. You hide behind walls of Jericho, your lies will come tumbling. Deny my place and time, you squander wealth that's mine. My light will shine. Inside so strong, I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, there's something inside.